living in a meticulously constructed fantasy world, and that world is starting to disintegrate. He needs help.
Welcome to the 15th episode of Zero Hour Strikes, the show that covers DC's 1994 crossover event, Zero Hour Crisis in Time. Every issue, every tie-in, every zero issue, I'm Siskoid.
I'm Bass.
And in this episode, we take a look at Zero Hour number one, which is because it's confusingly the fourth issue of Zero Hour, and there's one left to go. As we're counting down to zero.
Yeah, that's it. You know what? This is action-packed. So I think it's going to be fun.
Okay, good. I'm glad you think so, because I have concerns. Like, the main series, I always have concerns. This one has the cover that serves as our show's banner, Bass. So I guess we should talk about the cover first.
I actually kind of love this cover. Of all the covers, this is the one that I think, in my humble opinion, this is the one that actually kind of represents Zero Hour. We have heroes just disintegrating. We have a white circle that could be a clock. I don't know.
Oh.
And everything is kind of perfect. There's a lot of motion in this thing, yet everything is still. I really like it.
You're right. You know, it's funny. Not to look at it as a clock, not only as a clock, but at, you know, the Zero Hour logo, the O and zero has these spikes coming out of it. And the heroes are kind of in that configuration. They are those wedges. If we like blur our eyes, you know, cross our eyes and try to see it as a clock, then Hawkman's wing is the hand on the clock, the big hand on the clock, because it kind of has that black spike there as a motif. It's like the capes are kind of the hands on the clock. Bad girl
and Hawkman. Yeah.
I also like how it's like some of the heroes are like, there's no black on them. Like whatever is the color, there's no black outline. It's just like the green of Green Arrow, for example. So there's like, when there's black, it's because there's black in the costume. But otherwise, and they've got Batgirl in there, who is an anomaly. It's Kyle Rayner, Batgirl, Superman, Hawkman, and then Wave Rider, who's supposed to be dead, and the Ray, and Green Arrow, who just escaped death, or did he, in his own series. You're right. This is the Zero Hour cover.
Yeah. It's quite incredible.
I mean, it's the reason we picked it as a banner for the show. You know, it's striking, and you immediately know, okay, that's Zero Hour. The cover is by Dan Jurgens and Jerry Ordway, just as is the comic. So if we get into it, let's do the synopsis. The area known as Coast City, California, 2 hours, 12 minutes ago. All-consuming destructive entropy has been unleashed, crushing every shred of matter in existence. Guy Gardner's team, comprised of Supergirl, Steel, and Batgirl, are flying away from a temporal fissure, and more are popping up. They saw the universe blink out, but they're alive somehow. Is Extant toying with them? Steel is sucked into one of the fissures and is shredded alive. Somewhere, sometime, no timestamp, Extant is wondering what the hell is happening. These fissures aren't his doing. A mysterious figure blasts him with green energy to remind him who is really in charge, and is told he only took advantage of an entropic wave that the Mystery Man started. The fissures are caused by an obstruction in the time stream, and this guy is going to remove it as easily as he will Extant if he interferes again. Pocket Earth. The 30th century, an hour and 58 minutes ago. The Legion of Superheroes are the only sentient beings left in the cosmos, and as the Time Trapper leaves them, what little remains of this century starts to disintegrate. The Trapper meets the mysterious villain and is cut in half by an emerald beam. The obstruction has been removed. New York City, 53 minutes ago, Power Girl is in labor, but with reports of other cities vanishing, the assembled heroes start thinking about splitting off to help. As the future starts disappearing, Impulse and Booster Gold are erased from history. Gotham City, 40 minutes ago. 90% of the city is gone. J. Garrick the Flash, slower than ever since he was aged by Extant, finally gets to the Justice Society headquarters, where he calls out for the Spectre, who says he's been on the case, but looking into the shadow of time is difficult even for one such as he. As J. Garrick is erased from history, the Spectre swears to avenge him. New York City, 29 minutes ago. What's left of Guy Gardner's team arrives. The city is mostly gone. Captain Atom and the Ray have created an energy shield to protect the heroes for a time. Metron informs them that most of the universe is gone and the Mother Box can transport everyone to where time does not exist. He's talking about Vanishing Point. 24 minutes ago, some of the heroes arrive there to find the Linear Men in stasis. They don't have the tech to precisely move through time the way Metron needs them to, so they cannibalize Vril Dox's time probe to create a rig that will turn the Linear Men version of Matt Rider into a new Wave Rider. New York City, 14 minutes ago, the doctors say Wildcat is gonna make it. Jack and David Knight show up at the hospital to see their dad, Starman, who passes the mantle, or cosmic rod, to David, as Jack has never wanted that gig. Just in time for New York to be wiped from history. The Chamber of the Laymen, 13 minutes ago. The group of mystics is keeping a pocket of reality open for business, but Extant shows up and blasts them to bits. New York City, 7 minutes 34 seconds ago. We're down like to the second. Survivors are being herded into the subway system, and Extant shows up to gloat. A time fissure appears right on Batman, tearing him apart. Guy Gardner attacks, but Extant disables his armor. Everyone piles on with little chance of success, but then Wave Rider, the new Wave Rider, shows up with Metron's team. The Atom tries to get into Extant's head, but finds pure chronal energy that turns him into a teenager. Could have been worse, but Wave Rider saved him from being turned into protoplasm. Superman gets in on the action, but gets sucker punched by Hal Jordan, now called Parallax. It is now 60 seconds ago. Parallax knows how to fix the universe, even if it means destroying it. The entropy wave arrives and eats everything. Hal Jordan walks into it, talking about a clean slate, a remade universe, his universe. And who knows, maybe one universe won't be enough. Ta ta ta!
What? What is going on?
0 hour number one. So I guess at the very, very end, it is 0 seconds ago. You want to do like a top level general about this issue, or you want to go page by page?
You know what? Let's go page by page. I mean, there's a lot of stuff going on. There's a lot to unpack, so might as well unpack.
All right. Well, let's unpack that first sequence. So, I mean, at the end of Guy Gardner Warrior, which was our last episode, yep, everything blinks out of existence. It's that white page we see at the end of every comic or a lot of the comics. But somehow they survive this.
There's the rub. I mean,
were we lied to?
Well, kind of. But we don't know what's going on. So, you know, maybe that existence was wiped out. Maybe they were sucked into something else. We don't really know. The only thing we do know is they're still alive, and they're going to be confronting some stuff. Because right now, they're in this weird place, and there are these temporal anomalies, entropy bubbles, or whatever they want to call them. And they're kind of weird, because we don't know how they work. They're sucking stuff in. They're destroying stuff. Steel gets annihilated. I was kind of sad, honestly.
Yeah.
Quick, confusing start to this book. It gets kind of better.
A lot of this 0 hour stuff is set in sort of these brown mountains or plains, you know, like I don't know where any of this is. And then, of course, in the sky, there's no, we're told this is California, but I mean, Coast City's been destroyed, so it's just a wasteland. And then you got these bubbles in the air, and it's, you know, it's very sparse. When you look at 0 hour, because it's been inked or finished, really, it's more than just an inking job, finished by Jerry Ordway. There is an amount of detail there. You know,
yeah.
That is Ordway's art. But I feel like maybe in the breakdowns themselves, what Dan Jurgens did, and remember, he was writing and drawing Superman at the time, and also these five issues all came out the same month of 0 hour.
Wow. Wow. Somebody didn't sleep.
Yeah, exactly. So I feel like a lot of the backgrounds have been lacking, or even the crowd scenes seem very like, let's go into close up so we don't have to show a crowd, because after all, they're really doing this on a kind of rush. And I think the detail of it is an illusion. It's just Jerry Ordway's style of inking seems very like more feathery and like thinner lines. So it seems more detailed, but then when you look at what is in the frame, there isn't much there. You know, there's like special effects and empty landscapes.
Yeah,
there's a lot of that.
Well, there's a lot of white, and everything is going away, so I guess there's not much detail in everything just going into entropy.
Extant gets attacked by, obviously, it's Parallax.
Yeah,
as we find out later. I want to keep that to the end because it's all wrapped up together as you know, like that reveal. We can talk about the reveal at the end. But a good example of the emptiness of 0 hour is the Legion sequence. Because we saw this sequence, another angle on that sequence, in End of an Era,
Yeah.
With the three Legion books. Legion of Superheroes, Legionnaires, and Valor all had, like, this big story going on with the Time Trapper and, you know, the Time Trapper's world being brought into our space. And Time Trapper trying to, you know, save something. And this is the obstruction. This is, like, in the future, there's this traffic jam because of the Time Trapper, because of the Legion still surviving, and it's preventing the entropy wave from catching up to the present.
There are a couple things in there that I did like, but there are a couple things that are kind of weird.
I don't think that really matches what we saw in End of an Era.
No, it doesn't.
No. And one of the things, and I say, well, yeah, it's kind of empty, is that those original sequences have, like, two versions of the Legion. That's a lot of characters. But here they're represented by, like, only the Founders.
Yeah, and...
You know, remember End of an Era, there was, like, everybody was, like, I don't know, switching timelines, and so you had, like, different versions of them.
That was cool.
Yeah, there's a Saturn girl here with the tied-up pink bikini or bathing suit or whatever it is. So, you know, that's, like, the 70s version. But where's the rest of the Legion? You know, they should all be there, and it shouldn't just be a Saturn girl and a Lightning Lad kissing at the end. I mean, everybody was sort of embracing and coming together and making that sacrifice, kind of letting go, and the Time Trapper, like, sort of promised that this would all resolve itself. So, I don't know. There's no room for all of these Legionnaires in the art here, so we're left with the first three.
Times two. Yeah, and that kind of sucked, because I would have liked... Because the saying goodbye part in the Legionnaire books that we did read, there was a certain ending there. It felt like an ending. It felt like a goodbye, you know, and that feeling here, it kind of cheapens what we read. Kind of goes back and goes, you know, this is the Reader's Digest version.
Oh,
you know,
that's a good way to say it. Yeah.
I mean, it feels like a cliff note. Quick synopsis of what goes on. And then we have this green energy that just mows the Time Trapper in two. You know, that's enough of you.
I mean, it's a cool panel. Again, with it's Jerry Ordway putting a lot of effort in the rendering of, like, the shredded robes and all of that.
Oh, yeah.
I think throughout here, we're supposed to think whoever this figure is, you know, we've never seen Parallax. Like, today it seems... Yeah, Parallax. Hal Jordan became Parallax. We all know this, and we know what Parallax looks like. And there's been, like, you know, many stories about the Parallax creature force or whatever it is.
Yeah.
So we all know how this ends. This is because this is so big in comics. At this
time, we didn't know.
No, Parallax is not a word that we knew. And we're looking at a figure that, yes, is throwing green energy around, but has a cape, and that's not Green Lantern.
Yeah.
So we don't know who that is. And we're just supposed to see it as, okay, this guy just, like, the big bad of the Zero Hour is Extant. He just zapped Extant down. Now he's zapped the Time Trapper, who is, like, this unstoppable temporal villain, showing that this character, whoever that is the most powerful villain in existence.
So they're flexing.
They're flexing
Parallax.
Yeah. Then we go to New York City 53 minutes ago. So around 5 something for us. Well, we've got that subplot with Power Girl giving birth and the heroes kind of... I mean, this is like very much the weakest part of the Zero Hour series is the heroes assembled in New York. Because now it's been hours and now they're going... You know, maybe we should do something.
Exactly. This is all the most. I mean, Superman's in there. A lot of powerful superheroes just waiting around. Time is of the essence, and they're just waiting around. And, you know, Power Girl giving birth, and Wonder Woman telling Captain Atom to just go do something else. I mean, he wants the help, but
he's helped deliver a couple of kids, his own, back in the 60s.
Yeah, Wonder Woman won't have any of that.
Just go away. I don't even think that the dialogue makes sense. She says, "You're a soldier, Captain Atom, better suited to dealing with larger problems. Are you not an Amazon warrior?"
Yeah, I mean...
Why is Wonder Woman, one of the most powerful characters there, dealing with this tiny little problem?
I don't. This whole thing...
And I mean, do you really care about this baby being born when there's less than an hour of existence left? What does it matter?
Exactly.
You know,
but I mean, anybody could have done what Wonder Woman is doing right now. Is she the only girl there and they don't want anybody to see Power Girl's privates because she's going to deliver? I don't know. I don't know why. I don't know. I don't understand the motivations over here.
I know there's more women there because I saw the original crowd and it seems like the Justice League is there and there are other female members. However, again, we can't see all the characters. We're denied seeing all the characters.
We don't really see anybody in these panels. No, we see just a couple of them.
If you've got you're in there. If you don't, it's unlikely. I mean, they've got a conversation between Geo-Force and Hawkman that I also don't like because you got Geo-Force saying, "We must stop this catastrophe now." Yeah, no kidding. And Hawkman says, "Wait until we're organized." Like, what have you been doing for the last few hours? If not organizing.
I don't know. But I think the only cool thing about what's going on in these two pages, because, I mean, it's basically just two pages, is they're keeping the countdown alive where you have Impulse disappearing and then Booster Gold disappearing. Impulse is from the 30th century. Booster Gold from 25th. You know, everything, time is just unraveling.
Not that the Legion's time has been unjammed.
Yeah.
Then now, yes, all the future is being eaten and it eats those two characters. Makes me wonder what the deal is with the New Gods. Because Metron, you would think Metron is like way older. I don't know how old the New Gods are. You know, do they have like similar lifespans to ours? But Metron looked exactly like this when Darkseid was a kid. And even if that's only like, I don't know, 50 years ago. You know, when does Metron disappear? Or are the New Gods completely separate from the universe?
Yeah. Are they out of the time thing?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. Did anybody think about this when they were writing the book?
Unknown. Okay, well then, a little spotlight for Jay Garrick, right?
Our little Jay Garrick and the JSA that was just decimated in the first issues. Jay Garrick waddling to the old HQ there, and he's going to see the Spectre finally suiting up. So I can't wait to see what the Spectre is going to do.
Yeah, finally. Yeah, it's like the Spectre's waiting around for someone to die at somebody's hands. It's like, as long as it's a natural seeming event, nothing the Spectre can do. If there's revenge to be sought, then okay. So it has to be somebody's doing. You know, it has to be an injustice perpetrated by a sentient for him to do anything, but he could have done something way before. So this is kind of late in the game because, I mean, by the end of the issue, there's no reality left. So I don't even know if the Spectre can do anything.
I really don't know, but I mean, it's very late in the game for a character that was so essential for other crises. I mean, he's one of the tough ones. If anybody could have been in on this crisis in time, it could have been the Spectre. I mean, he is kind of timeless.
And I do like that when the Flash runs in, he says, wherever you are, whatever spooky dimension you're tossing planets around in. I love that line because like the most memorable image of the Spectre is him smashing what looks like the Earth on the head of a demon. So that's kind of a reference to that. And then we're back to New York City because we just can't get enough of that. And Guy Gardner's team shows up. They've returned. And lots to hate. I'm telling you, the New York City sequences are just the pits. And in this case,
they're awful.
Guy Gardner shows up. Aren't you guys doing something? As we saw, he was very active in his own series. He tried to actually be proactive. And Batman tells him, "Shut up, Gardner. Start moving civilians to safety now." Where is their safety? As existence collapses in on itself, it's like saying, go play in traffic. It's so pointless to tell Guy Gardner that. Oh, how about you do that thing that is pointless? So I dislike that immensely.
And I mean, the next panel is just as wonderful, where we have one hand Aquaman saying something that we all know also, like, surrounded by death, no place for a baby. I feel so useless. And Wonder Woman just goes, for God's sake, Arthur, get to a doctor.
Where's he going to find a doctor?
Why would he?
90% of the city is gone and, you know, collapsing soon. There's less than a half hour to go before zero. Of course, they don't know this, but I'm pretty sure they can feel it. You know, there's not much time left. Also, I have a big question about like, why they launched the Aquaman series, like, only a couple months before this? Because wouldn't the new Aquaman series have made more sense? You know, you could have launched it with 0 months, along with a lot of other new series.
Oh, yeah.
But instead, it starts, he gets his hand eaten by Piranha, and, like, now it's issue 3, you need 0 issue. You know, it's like, so he's in this, he's not yet in the new costume, doesn't have the hook hand, he still has the bandages. So it's like, there's only been 2 issues of his series at this point, basically. Oh. So I don't know. I don't know what's going on at DC, but this is not, again, these are like very, it's like Aquaman feeling useless. It's spitting on this network, Bass.
Why? I know. Yeah.
He swum to New York City at some point. The Metron chair called him up like everyone else, and he's finally gotten there.
Well, he's a bit slower. He only has one hand.
Right.
Now.
It's harder to swim. So in the middle of a medical emergency, he decided to show up and hang around to do nothing in New York during the crisis.
And apparently annoy Wonder Woman.
It looks like she's rolling her eyes in the back of her. You know, she's like, oh, God. Can't you see? We're busy here.
On a brighter note, we have a Dark Star there to, you know, deal with stuff.
I'm not even sure. And then, okay, so then they move to Vanishing Point. They're going to get the Linear Men. We saw the Linear Men were put in stasis instead of killed.
Yes.
This is the reason. They were needed for plot purposes. And the two Linear Men that are there are Matt Rider, who is not Wave Rider, but in another timeline had become Wave Rider, and Lorelei, who's like the girl of the group. There's not much to say about these guys, but this is the part where, you know, I didn't expect Vril Dox's time probe to show up or be useful. That seemed like a throwaway thing in Legion.
Well, Vril Dox is full of surprises because the probe was useful.
Yeah, I guess Vril Dox saved the universe after all. I'm sure that's what he'll say. But at this point, it seems like all these coincidences are sort of coming together. Metron brought exactly the right people, the Atom, so he could like traffic through the guts of that thing. And they're going to recreate a Wave Rider, and that's the reason he's on the cover.
There we go. Plot.
We're going to keep that for later, because now we move to New York City, where 14 minutes ago, the hospital where the JSA was sent is one of the 10% of the city that still exists.
Yeah. Yeah. Lucky them.
And somehow, I don't know. I don't know where they are all living at this point. The JSA seem to be based in Gotham City, and that may be like a change in the timeline. Maybe I'll give them the benefit of the doubt, but the Starmen are supposed to be operating out of Opal City. Wherever those cities are, they're in driving distance that during a collapse of reality, the two sons can drive to the hospital in another city.
Yeah, they were on their way.
Their dad only was aged by extant so many hours ago.
Yeah, it was pretty quick. But this is a great setup for me going to read my Starman Omnibus, which I have, and now I want to read, because this panel kind of is mirrored in there somewhere.
Oh, when, is it?
Kind of. We see like a flashback of the original Starman passing the torch.
It does look like a torch in a way, doesn't it? Rod. Yeah. I mean, reality gets eaten up right away, but this is the setup for Starman number 0, which of course we'll discuss as part of 0 month. When we are done with the crossover itself. And what's important here is that David Knight will be the new Starman, and Jack Knight doesn't want anything to do with it. Well, I wonder what's going to happen there.
Once again, these are plot points that will be exploited later.
At least Wildcat survives. One of my favorite JSAs. Yeah.
Well, he does have 9 lives.
I guess that's what he was given as a power in the... like in the 2000 series. But
yeah.
But at this point, you know, he's just supposed to be like this tough old boxer. But I've always loved Wildcat. Whether you give him powers or not, he's a good character.
Yeah, that's irrelevant. Powers or not, he's a great character.
The Chamber of the Laymen. What the hell is this? This is another setup for another 0-issue starting series.
Okay.
In this case, Primal Force. There's just been throughout the series, the main series, there's always been these pages that are like, why are we catching up with Highfather? Why are we doing, you know, why are we there at all? And I feel like this is one of them. This is a waste of a page because Extant, who's supposed to be beaten down by Parallax, now takes a page to like show up. He's been told to stop interfering. I felt like Now, he shouldn't be the villain anymore. Maybe he wants that last hurrah with the actual heroes, but showing up somewhere to prevent mystics from keeping reality alive, even a little bit. Maybe it's out of a sequence for him. I don't know, but I don't care about this page. He's going to basically kill characters I don't know so that a new team that no one ever cared about takes their place. This is the setup here because we don't know who these guys are, really. They were Dr. Mist's guys.
I had no idea. To me, this was a throwaway page. On this page, they could have put like advertisings for x-ray glasses and a muscle book where you, if you read it, you have muscles and these great rocket shoes. This could have been easily just an advertisement page, and I wouldn't have known the difference.
Yeah, pretty much. Because at least, like, the setting up Starman, like, historically, that's the first appearance of Jack Knight. You know, it's great. In this case, it's not the first appearance of anything. So I guess Dr. Mist had these pals that were mystics. I don't know who they are, who they're supposed to be. We get two names here, Kreising, who seems to be named after artist Ray Kreising. So it seems to be like an inside joke. The other one's called Donovan, which I can't tie to anything. Maybe someone out there knows.
Maybe
the singer. Maybe it's the singer because, I mean, what is the Donovan song? Must be the season of the
wind. Oh. Okay.
I'm going to say that's the reason here because at first I thought, okay, I was doing some a little research. Like, I thought, is it Donovan Kane who was part of the Night Force series? That's mystical. But no, nobody here looks like Donovan Kane. So maybe that's the joke. I don't know. I don't get it. I'm not sure I care, you know.
Maybe it's for Donovan Bailey, the Canadian Olympic athlete. Maybe. I'm just guessing.
Bus, back to New York.
Well, you know what? Of all the New York pages.
Yeah, finally something happened.
This is my favorite. For one thing that happens once, well, it happens a couple times, but in this time, something magical happens. They kill the Batman.
Oh, I don't believe in any of these deaths. And you shouldn't either when you see Batman die. Like, oh, did they really get rid of Steel? Could be. I mean, unlikely he had a series, but, yeah. You know, when you're reading this out of context, you're like, oh, Steel dies here. Could be. Batman? Could be. No, it's all going to be undone. That's when you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know?
But it's still fun to see the Batman die. Not because I don't like the Batman. I mean, I love Batman, but he always dies in, like, this is one of the weirdest ways that anybody can die. It's ludicrous.
A time rift pops up exactly where you are.
Yeah. I mean, that's what can this wonderful superhero do except die nothing? I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, man. And then then everybody tries to stop Extant and all of this stuff. I still have problems. I'll admit it.
Of course.
Yeah. I mean, Wave Rider and all these guys come in as the cavalry, right? And it's a good group because you got Superman in there. You've got, they sent all the big guns out to the Vanishing Point and Wave Rider himself. And the Atom tries that trick where he'll get into somebody's head. He's sort of saying, well, I'll try to, you know, I'll grow inside his, I don't know, inner ear and cause him to have it feel unbalanced or something. But really, you could just grow inside his brain and kill him, right? We understand that he could do this. He does it to Darkseid in like an alternate future story and in Grant Morrison's JLA. So he's very dangerous. But then it doesn't work. It's all like chronal energy and whatnot. And then it turns him into a teenager. So this is another weird, what is going to be a zero issue, right? Is my question. Why wasn't Aquaman started with a zero issue? Same question with the Atom's Teen Titans. Obviously, there's still some Teen Titans comics going on at this point.
Yeah.
But in a while, this teenage Atom is going to be leader of a new group of Teen Titans, and that they don't jumpstart that here. Like, they make this change, and then after a while, they do something with it. Shouldn't there have been an Atom number zero where he's a teenager, or a Teen Titans, if he's going to be leading the Teen Titans, which he eventually did, a Teen Titans number zero with this new group that he's heading? What's going on? You know? Well, what is this move?
It kind of feels like somebody said, hey, we have a Teen Atom thing going on. Should we do something with that? And somebody else said, well, we can put him in the Teen Titans. He's a teen. Kind of feels like that.
Yeah, but that was a Dan Jurgens series as well. So I think maybe he's setting himself up for a series later. He wrote and drew that Teen Titans, where I can hardly name any other member but the Atom. I don't want to get into it too much because I had that fight in the Who's Who comments section, on the Who's Who podcast comments section a month back. And like, I am of the opinion that that team was just like nothing. Nobody remembers those Teen Titans. I'm sorry. I think I can name Argent, but that's a name. I don't know which one she was. They're all new characters. I mean,
well, that's saying a lot. But we're at that place in the book where we're setting up the biggest panel ever. The second time that Aquaman talks. And and that's to say, never thought he was mixed up in this. Oh, Aquaman in this. I mean, I love the Aquaman. I'm just going to put the in front of every superhero, you know. I love the Aquaman, but in this thing today, he's totally irrelevant. Just go home, Aquaman.
Go home. Yes, why do we care about your opinion at this point?
Where the hell were you?
Like, I understand later on, you know, you got reactions from Kyle Rayner, you got from Green Arrow. That makes sense, Guy Gardner, but, you know, no. Aquaman is just like this. He's Chekhov in the Star Trek movies, where he's basically just doing the reaction shots and saying things like, Bosha moi, whatever. So, it's not a great role for him. And again, Parallax, to show how powerful he is, punches out Superman. Do we remember how many punches Superman took from Doomsday? Because I feel like this fight kind of was over before it began in this case.
Parallax is flexing big time. And even the sound, it's not even a boom or a crack. It's just a...
Walk.
Walk. I mean...
It's a cooking implement.
Yeah.
And then he's going to... I mean, I don't even understand the page, the following page, where he beats Kyle Rayner. The current Green Lantern, the guy who has his ring, in fact, is flying in behind him, is going to try to, you know, backstab him somehow. And then we cut away to reaction shots, and then we come back to Parallax with his terrible haircut, I must say. And there's just like a green flash in the background.
Yeah, it's like he Thanos snapped him out of
existence. Yeah, the way his fingers are as well. So it's like, we don't even know what happened. Did he disappear? Was he eaten by the entropy wave? Is that what that's supposed to be?
I have no
idea. Because it seems to be coming up behind him anyway. So maybe that's it. Like, it's behind Kyle Rayner. There is like this blue electricity.
Yeah.
And then there's like white and green behind him. So when he says beat it, kid, he actually didn't do anything. It's just the entropy wave came up and smothered him. It's not clear. Why isn't it clear?
It's not clear.
Why isn't it clear?
I don't know. It kind of feels like Parallax is controlling the wave.
Mm-hmm. Is he? Yeah. It's not clear.
I really don't know. I really don't know. But he walks into it.
Yeah, he seems fine with it. So it's like he's going into it. And from there, he's going to be able to what? Quantum fix the universe. Like, he's not being destroyed by it. It seems to be. But I got to say, like that last page where he says, who knows? Maybe one universe won't be enough. Like, you know how many commenters have said that back in the day they were reading this and they were thinking, oh, it, you know, 0 Hour is going to bring back the multiverse. And then at some point they thought, well, no, it's, you know, that's not what they're doing. And they were sort of disappointed. This seems to tease exactly that. It seems to say, like 0 Hour number zero, the universe is going to be reborn as a multiverse. And we know that didn't happen. So that's like
so many,
that's mean.
So many setups. Oh yeah, nothing happens. Oh, it's entropy.
It is entropy. You're right, it is entropy. So we kept this discussion to the end, but the whole question of Extant being the villain, being in all the ads, being on all the covers, being the villain up to this issue, which is number one, and then he's just part of the group of heroes going, you know, like his jaw dropping, going whoa, like everybody else. What do you think of this? That we had a villain for most of the event, and then at the end we go, no, the real mastermind was this guy.
Well, it feels like a cop-out. You know, it feels like somebody came into the brainstorm last minute and said something, and it stuck.
I got an idea about Hal Jordan.
Sorry I'm 2 hours late, but how about Hal Jordan coming back?
And thematically consistent, by which I mean Extant was really Monarch, and Monarch was supposed to be Captain Atom, but got replaced last minute by Hawk.
Yeah.
So here, he gets replaced as the villain by Parallax, by Hal Jordan.
I guess it's within the theme.
Not on purpose, but I mean, it seems like some sort of poetic justice that the guy, you know.
It's obviously not a last minute idea, because, I mean, the whole Guy Gardner thing, trying to figure out how to save Hal Jordan. And the Hal Jordan teases all the way from the beginning of this wonderful adventure kind of leads us to believe that this was the idea behind everything.
Yes. There's foreshadowing. Yeah.
A crumb trail, you know. So we can follow the crumb trail right to this point.
Is it still playing fair with the audience? Not that we cared about Extant in any way.
No. It's cheating everywhere. I mean, there's with everything. You know, we're killing off people, we're teasing stuff, and they don't happen. To me, that's cheating. You're not playing fair at all, and it's stuff I don't really like. I don't like it when that happens. I mean, I like the panel. I like that Parallax punched out Superman. Sure, that I like. I like how, you know, Parallax is all powerful, and we have, like, Kyle Rayner between his legs and Superman, and he's like, oh my God. And, you know, that moment is great. And that last page where he just walks into the white, I mean, it's great. It's a great reveal. Don't get me wrong. But this great reveal could have been in another story. It's kind of like Parallax is hijacking this story right now.
And in a way, I mean, again, thematically, he wants to rewrite DC Comics. So.
Well, we all want to.
Well, I have a show about it. but the idea here is that he does hijack the comic. He goes, you know what? I hate this DC universe, this version of the DC universe. I don't like it, especially what they've done to Green Lantern. in a way, that's it. You know, it's like the destruction of Coast City is the inciting event that causes this madness. He shows up and he says, "Now this villain is crap. This DC universe is full of mistakes since the crisis. And maybe he's even thinking maybe the multiverse would be a cool thing to bring back." You know, that's what he's kind of saying. And then he goes into the white page where he will give a stern talking to the DC editors about changing things. Metatextually, you know, that's kind of what it is. It's just like a more subtle version of what they eventually did with Superboy Prime. Which was kind of the same idea of let's retcon continuity because like an angry fan doesn't like it. So Hal Jordan is kind of that character here and may have, in fact, kind of inspired Geoff Johns to do that with Superboy Prime. Because a lot of Geoff Johns' work at DC is kind of based on this comic. You know, not just Infinite Crisis, but, you know, all the Parallax stuff and all the retconning is going to have to do to bring back Hal Jordan without the stain of having been this villain and making Parallax a creature, like a virus inside the Green Lantern battery, and then so creating these kinds of monsters for every color of the rainbow, and all of this stuff kind of springs out of this one moment.
And that's why, I guess, you're blowing my brains here, Cisco, because I'm looking at Hal Jordan's armor, and it actually kind of still looks like Superboy Prime's armor. And everything comes from, I guess everything comes from this moment.
Yeah.
The fear inside the green, and that's their weakness, and that's why, oh man, it all comes down to this.
Even the fact that the Spectre shows up finally in the crossover here, and we know that part of the redemption arc for Hal Jordan is becoming the Spectre.
Oh,
it's almost like there's like these mirrors and these parallels to future DC history. So, I mean, if you're looking for a comic that is important, this one doesn't just have the first appearance of the beloved Jack Knight Starman. It's got more than that. Like, as a historical object, it is better than as a story. Because as we've said before, I mean, it's just like there's a lot of a collection of scenes. There's a lot of collage going on in these in the main series issues.
Story-wise, it's not that good, but historically, this is the primordial ooze for Blackest Night and all the rings and the colors and the Spectre and Hal Jordan and
it all crisis. Comes from here. Yeah, a lot of comics to come. Maybe this is like the inspiration for a lot of these things, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's just a weird coincidence. I don't know.
There are no weird coincidences that don't exist.
Well, while we think about that, we'll take a short break. When we return, your feedback on our previous episode.
And action! It's Fade Out. Hosted by film fanatic Rob Kelly and a roster of special guests, Fade Out will examine the final films of Hollywood's brightest lights, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Letters Lost in Time.
Letters Lost in Time.
A selection of your comments on our coverage of Green Arrow number 90, that almost silent issue, and Guy Gardner Warrior number 24. So that episode was actually entitled Friends of Hal Jordan, and a few commenters, including Bradley Null and David S. Gutierrez, felt the need to point out that Hal has no friends.
Oh.
Maybe at this point.
That's why he became Parallax.
It's just like friendlessness.
Yeah, he had nobody to talk to.
Speaking of Dag, he says, I followed the entire Ollie run of Green Arrow, and mark me as one of those sad to see him return to the proper DCU. The lead up to Connor Hawk, a truly great character in his own right, was rough riding. As to this issue, I loved it. Great imaginative use of the event at hand. Diablo Frank. First tells us he doesn't have the stamina to do another round of slapping Oliver Queen around, but still manages six paragraphs on the topic. So here's one of the things he says about the Green Arrow that dies here. He says, Mike Grell was, at best, a second-tier 1970s fan favorite who took his fading heat to first comics early in the 80s, but DC was able to position him as another Frank Miller for one last new wave mature readers. This totally isn't just low enthusiasm cannon fodder, prestige format miniseries, hurrah. He's talking about the Longbow Hunters, which eluded him for a long time because it was direct market only. And when he eventually found it, he thought it was boring and not a little gross. I guess he means like Black Canary is insinuated to have been sexually assaulted. And he says,
he says,
that was about the time I realized that I preferred Mike Grell to just shut up and draw pretty. Comics in the 80s were daring and sophisticated by design, playing simultaneously to the now middle-aged boomers, the edgy teenage Generation X, and formerly resistant intellectuals swayed by the fact that there was something to this pop art after all. Only in a period like this could a guy like Mike Grell be allowed to take a piece of corporate IP and internalize it so completely. Green Arrow was so old hat, so devalued, that Grell could turn him into a creator proxy for a four-color big chill. He could literally make this kid superhero an idealistic 60s burnout confronting aging in the Reagan-Bush years. He could strip him of all his fantastic elements, turn him into basically a dramatic newspaper strip like Dateline Danger, and play that out for his graying fellows until they finally aged out or died off. I think it speaks to the singular narcissism of boomers that they had the run of comic books from their own 50s and 60s childhood through my 70s, 80s one, and only started to cater to other tastes after a 40-year stranglehold. So, Grell's Green Arrow was a boring book for old people until DC decided they wanted some of that speculator boom money just after it was bursting. They threw the book into the Batman editorial group, who used it as Jim Aparo's retirement home as he was going steadily blind. It was dominated by editors moonlighting as writers and whichever Batman group scripter had time to collect a check that month. Mix in a guest star of the month, a heavy-handed imagey inker, and package it under the amorphous heading of Crossroads, when what you really mean is, we don't know what to do with him. But then he says the silent issue was a perfect resolution. He says, this is a book about a dude whose skills are fading, facing going out like a punk at the hands of a nobody. No kingpin, no swallowing a shotgun blast, no Superman holding you and crying after a glorious sacrifice. Just a guy past his prime, running on borrowed time. That puts it in perspective.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Ange says, funny, Warrior seems way more 90s extreme in nature, his whole body as a weapon, than a Power Ranger homage. But Supergirl sounds like she's featured enough in this issue that I need to hunt it down. Yeah, Ange, I mean, I thought you had like a complete collection of Supergirl comics, so I'm happy to have found something that you could add to it. Rob McCarthy says, I can see why they didn't do it, but if I had been editor, I might have let Time Paradox Bad Girl stay.
Oh, well, I'd rather have Oracle get better and re-become Bad Girl. You can build on that. You know, she would be a better Batgirl once she comes back, but she'd probably live with that fear of being breakable, you know? And that to me as a character is character gold. For as a never wounded Batgirl, she could be interesting, but you'd have to play on that naivete to make her be too bold, always putting herself in danger where we, the audience, would be like, oh my God, are you crazy, woman? But I'd rather have that character that's already been broken than to have a yet-to-be-broken Batgirl.
I think what they did eventually, like in the main timeline, not the reboot, works great to fine. That is to say that we have Oracle, and she eventually mentors a younger Batgirl. You know?
Yeah, that I did like.
Tim Price says, by Guy Gardner number 24, I was still on the JLI bandwagon in the post-Bwahaha era, getting Green Lantern series and this spinoff. And yeah, I kept up with Guy's change in status longer than I should have. I can't explain it. I dropped Grell's Green Arrow at number 20, but kept shapeshifting Warrior. Fully admit I don't always make good choices. Well, I mean, that's debatable. Well, I mean, you know, it's valid to a lot of people here. There are comments about people who didn't like that version of Green Arrow, so that's fine. Martin Gray says, I'm one of those who isn't a fan of silent issues. They're not comics. We need a story told in picture and words. And yes, the fact that they're quick reads is a factor in my lack of enjoyment. This Green Arrow book isn't that. It was slow going. I've been through it 3 times, having heard Siskoid's synopsis, and I still can't follow it, despite the excellent Ed Barreto being the illustrator. It doesn't split properly or consistently. It seemed to switch between whether we're following one strand or both. Then Martin busts it wide open. He says, was this issue killing off Grell Ollie then? Was it saying he'd been on a parallel world all along? So that we, you know, one Green Arrow survives, that's the Green Arrow of the DC Universe. And one Green Arrow dies, and that's the old man Green Arrow of the Mike Grell years.
Oh, wow.
So I like that.
I do like
that. Good job, Martin.
Yeah, it tickles my brain. Like
the like opium.
Like 20 years. Like opium. And that time, like 20 years ago, when somebody told me, you know what, James Bond could be just the handle for that person in that position. And I was like, oh my God.
That's why there's many actors. That is a personal theory of mine, yeah.
Well, that was you. Oh, okay. You was the one. But it tickles my brain. I love it.
And on that note, it's the end of the show. We have to mention that the Fire and Water Podcast Network has a Patreon page. And if you like our content, please think about making a one-time or monthly donation, the amount of which will allow you to unlock rewards. Get on the zero list at patreon.com/FW podcast, just like these fine folks did. They got on the zero list, and that means they're going to escape the cataclysmic time wave that's coming from both ends of history. And in fact, that is here now. 0 seconds ago, Jim Ball has been saved from the Manhunters as they are sent out across the universe, even though no man escapes the Manhunters.
I am no man.
David Capoon has been saved from contemporary New York City as he gazed on the Titan's Tower in the distance, and Michael Bailey has been saved from Space Cabby's cab, so he doesn't have to pay the bill. A reminder that you can leave us comments at fireandwaterpodcast.com. You can also follow Fire and Water's Facebook page or on Twitter. The account is FW Podcast. So goodbye, Bess. I guess this is it. There's no reality left until next month when suddenly there's reality again.
Sounds great. I'll be taking that break.
Next time on 0 Hour Strikes, Action Comics number 703, Team Titans number 24, and Damage number 6.